This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
All right, just take a little bit more time, be a little bit more patient. We've got a great lineup for you today. We'll visit with Guy Williams, president, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust, in the 12 o'clock hour. We'll talk about new scam target, parents and students. We'll also talk about the Fed Open Market Committee, the uncertainty that they have talked about. Michelle Bowman to become the Fed Vice Chairman for Supervision. What does that mean? The federal plan to potentially sell Western land for home development. At 11:30, Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics, joins us. We'll talk about the mayor's race. He posted an opinion piece with NOLA.com. Or the advocate, I should say, outlining a number of questions that should be asked of mayoral candidates, a lot of which we've discussed here over the past 18 to 24 months, some of which, interestingly, were some of the original 40 reasons for the recall petition that I talked about before when that took off and failed. So we'll visit with Ron Fauché. Visit also with Oliver Thomas at 10:30, City Councilman District E. He just recently announced his run for mayor, and we'll find out what his thoughts are. And also Colonel Alex Gann, coming right out here, retired colonel and fighter pilot for the Israeli Air Force, now living in a small village in northern Israel. The ceasefire is over. Israel has recommenced bombing Gaza, and they say that any additional negotiations will be during wartime activities. There will be no other ceasefires. Colonel Alex Gann joins us. Colonel, welcome to the show. Okay, we're having a little bit of technical difficulty in connecting with Colonel Gann. We had him a second ago. So interestingly, obviously, as a result of a lot of the moves by Hamas and what they have actually done in prisoner swaps and hostage swaps for prisoners, I should say, really making a spectacle of the whole situation, trying to embarrass the Israeli government, trying to demean the Israeli government, trying to advance what they are trying to the Palestinian population of just how much control they are in or not in. As a result of that and a number of other activities, they've resumed bombing in Gaza. And we're joined by Colonel Alex Gann. Colonel, welcome to the show.
Thank you, and have a good day.
Colonel, things are changing fast there. Obviously, there was a ceasefire. Hamas playing games as it relates to the terms and conditions. I think yesterday or the day before, the negotiator for the United States, Steve Witkoff, says he may have been duped by Hamas. And we find ourselves in, it looks like from here, a very precarious position there. Your thoughts?
Well, Hamas, we know who Hamas are. And we don't trust them. Our main goal should be to get the hostages back ASAP, no matter what. They're dying in captivity. We see the condition that they come back in, and they are getting worse and worse. And we should get them out under any condition. And there was a certain agreement. I think we should have gone forward with it. We know it doesn't sound good, like we're caving into the Hamas, but we will get to the Hamas. So I'm not worried about it. But I think this is what should be done. I was Saturday evening in the hostage, it's called the Hostage Square in Tel Aviv, where tens of thousands of people are demonstrating. And we speak to the families of the people who are there, and we speak to the hostages who came back. It's an unbelievable situation, and we have to deal with it in that way. I think putting pressure on Hamas, we're killing more and more of Hamas leaders and Hamas people, but that will not bring them back. Sorry to say so. And
how do you compel them though to meet the timelines that were? Obviously negotiated, and they just unilaterally and on a whim say, well, we're not going to do that on Saturday, or we're not going to do that on Wednesday, or whatever the day may be.
Well, first of all, the fact that they do not keep their word doesn't mean that we don't have to keep our word. And also Israel did not keep its commitment to this, to the second stage. I really don't care who's on the right or who's on the wrong side. The only thing that I think is important now is getting these poor people out. Now, if they were only, soldiers, and me as a soldier, I knew that I may fall captive in enemy territory. Okay, but that's the risk I would. These are people who were pulled out of bed. Old people, young people. People have been tortured. They do not deserve to stay there. And I think we should have go ahead and finish this in one shot. Everybody back, and we will withdraw from Gaza, and we will get back to Hamas later on. I'm sure it will happen, because they will not keep the agreement, which we say Gaza should be disarmed, et cetera, et cetera. They will not keep it, and then we'll have the excuse to go in again and finish them off.
But they've been opposed to this one kind of one stop.
No, they did not. They offered it. They agreed to it. They offered it. Look, everybody is tired of this war. Hamas is tired. Right. Everybody is tired out of it, wants to finish it. And no one will get his full terms and conditions. And today, those who are paying the price of these poor hostages and their families, which is something which is, it's unbelievable, it's outrageous, it's unjust. You can find a million words to describe it. But after all, they're there, and we should get them out, because we can't get them out by force. We don't manage to do that.
What is the reaction from Israelis, the folks out on the street, to the UN and the WHO really making excuses for Hamas?
No, we're sick of them. We think the UN, especially the General Counsel and the Secretary, they are biased. They are, I would be take it carefully to say anti-Semitic, but they're surely anti-Israeli. They do not do their job. The Red Cross didn't do their job, but at the end, so what? It doesn't. At this stage, we see that that the U.S. understands that the U.S. is leaving the UN organization, and we are. Hopefully, when we leave, it doesn't have an impact. But when the U.S. leaves those organizations, and they lose a great deal of their funding, hopefully, some of them will just plain cease to exist. They're unbelievable. The human rights organization, who is led by people from China, from Iran, from North Korea, they are really worried about human rights. They're really yeah. But now,
Colonel,
get him on.
Go ahead.
Yeah. No.
Colonel, at one point in time, there was a lot of discussion. You and I had talked about it a number of times about proof of life. Are we confident that we know who is in Hamas's control as it relates to hostages? And do we know or do we have any confidence that level relative to whether or not they are alive or dead?
Well, we have a few sources of the information. The most valid one is the people who came out, who were released recently. Mm-hmm. And they were with their friends over there. And they saw them alive, and they know their conditions. So we know for sure they were alive a month ago or 3 weeks ago. And it's a great deal of the people we know. We think today there are 24 people alive out of the 59 or over there. So this is one source. The second source is we have intelligence coming out from Hamas, which in this way or other way give us information. Also, Hamas itself, from time to time, releases as a matter of psychological warfare, a movie or picture of someone, so we know they're alive. So when we combine all these sources together, this is the number we come up to. Now, we're not sure it's the final number. It can be more, it can be less, but most of them have a high probability of still being alive. Some of them are very, very bad physical condition, but they're alive, hopefully.
In the event that some that we know and have evidence of proof of life are returned to Israelis not alive, what do you think the reaction of the Netanyahu administration is going to be? I mean, it's pretty aggressive right now.
It's Netanyahu, to tell you the truth, he doesn't care much about the hostages now. What he's dealing with now is the survivability of his government. And he really doesn't work at returning the hostages. Now, if they will come, some of them will come back in a body bag. Hamas will say, look, you bombed them now. They were killed by you. Eventually, we will know the truth because we have good...
They've made those claims already, right? Have we been able to prove otherwise with some of the remains that have been brought back?
Yes. Some of them were said they were killed by Israeli bombing, but when you do the autopsy and you find a bullet at the head, then they were not killed by a bomb.
Right.
And we know exactly what they were killed, each and every one of them, in a very high certainty. But again, that's one of the reasons we have to get them out under any condition.
Back to the number, do we know how many? Are we pretty sure?
As I said, we almost are sure that 24 are still alive.
24, right.
Yeah, out of the 59. But some of them, I think about four or five are not sure here or there. Actually, we're not sure that all the people, the dead ones, are in Hamas hands. Maybe some of them are missing, and they don't have them. We don't know that yet. But we know these are the people that are missing.
We have entered into a season of a religious season in Israel. Has that complicated matters?
And how it does. It really does. We're in a country in a big mess now. Because we have a big problem. I'll start from the beginning. The religious people basically divided into, I would say, three main groups. The ultra-Orthodox one, which are about 13% of the population, the settlers in the West Bank, who believe, you know, settling the whole territory of Israel west of the Jordan, and the religious people who are, you know, the normal ones, I will call them over here. The big issue is with the ultra-Orthodox. The ultra-Orthodox do not serve in the army, and they don't want to serve in the army, although today the law requires them to do that, and they have to do that now. The government doesn't know what to do with this hot potato. So in the meantime, they don't serve in the army. They get a lot of money under the coalition conditions, because that's the only way they will support the Netanyahu government. So now they're passing, actually today, they're voting on the yearly budget, the 2025 budget, which gives them huge sums of money without demanding anything from them. This makes most of the population in the country sick. We don't agree with that. But Netanyahu is doing that because he sees this as a condition for his government to survive. Hopefully that will cause his government to fall. It's the worst government we had, I think, since the day Israel was born. It's an unbelievable, incapable, with people who are not fit for the job. It's a very, very low-level, poor-functioning government. But they have a strong coalition. They have 64. Now they have actually 68 out of the 120. So basically they rule. Even if the majority of the people in Israel want to go to elections today, they will not do that. And I don't know if you're aware with what's going on here with the they're trying to get rid of the general attorney of the government, who is actually, she's the only one who's standing between them and a dictatorship. So that's why we're demonstrating. You know, I go nowhere once or twice a week to Jerusalem to demonstrate against this government. So it's kind of chaotic over here now. And one of the reasons that Netanyahu is trying to get the kidnapped people out of focus, he doesn't want to deal with it because the religious people who want to, I would say those who live in the West Bank and want to settle Israel, refuse to cease fire. They want to continue fighting. They want to occupy Gaza. Some of them are dreaming of settling in Gaza, which is idiotic completely. So it's chaotic.
Do you find that it that the population is more divided today than it was, let's say, a year ago?
Yes. I would say the whole issue, look, Netanyahu, he's a master of really, he's an unbelievable politician. And he has unbelievable capabilities of, we say, you know, how he lies because you see his lips move. But he manages to rule this our political government for over 20 years. It's unbelievable. And he, one of the ways that he deals with it is dividing the people into, and actually, I don't know how to put the, I forgot the word, putting the population, part of it, against the other part.
Yes,
with incitement and with telling lies, et cetera, et cetera. And when 2 years ago his government was formed and it declared this new, I would say, the constitutional revolution, they were trying to pull through, this really threw the whole country into chaos. The demonstrations halted that a little bit. And then the war came out, so they stopped. But now they're renewing this process on the steroids. They're trying to make all kinds of changes and fire people. They're going crazy. And the country is very divided. People are talking about Israel losing its democratic beliefs and turning into something like Hungary or Turkey. I don't believe it will happen, but we have to fight against it. We can't.
Yeah.
We cannot let it happen because the country will fall apart if it happens.
I would agree with your assessment as well. Colonel, as always, we know you're busy. Thank you so much for joining us. Colonel Alex Gann, retired colonel and fighter pilot for the Israeli Air Force. Next time we visit, I really want to spend more time talking about Hezbollah and what's going on in southern Lebanon. It seems as though there's a lot of action there as well.
Yeah,
and maybe I'll get you back on here. Yeah, maybe I'll get you back on in a couple of days and we'll talk about that because that's a developing story as well. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Stay safe. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Low-carb keto yo-yo diets, GLP-1 injections, but you're never going to lose weight if your liver is clogged with fat. So what can you do? It's simple. Almased. Almased is a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight. And it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Join millions who have transformed their lives with Almased. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
And stay with us. We had a recent announcement in the mayor's race, and it's taking shape. Councilman Oliver Thomas from District E, and he joins us. Oliver, welcome to the show.
Hey, man. Thank you, Newell, man. All blessings to you and your listening audience. How you doing, man?
Doing well, Oliver. Let's start out with, if you would, what motivated you to run for mayor?
Well, first of all, what really motivated me was people in the community. I'm not looking for the title of mayor. The title doesn't really mean much if you're not willing to do the work, put up with the criticism, the challenges, and really kind of bring people together to make what I think New Orleans ought to be. And that's a city that works for all of us. So I've been meeting with folk all across the city for the last several months, and what I heard was encouraging, and the support was encouraging. And, of course, lastly, with my family, because it impacts the people closest to us when we're in office, and you know that as much as anyone else. So that was a motivating factor.
Now, I was watching your video, and you said that this city needs a comeback, and no one understands that better than you, alluding to your history. Yes. But a comeback has somewhat of a little bit of a negative connotation as to where you're starting from. So how do you assess the state of the city today?
Well, Neil, you know, one thing about you and I is you host your show, and I've hosted that show on that other station for 12 years. We read all the reports about economics, housing, the state of our community. We interview people from the White House to the outhouse. So we know that Louisiana, in a lot of critical areas, is B-minus, NF. We know that Louisiana is 50th in the well-being of children. We know that right here in New Orleans, that single African-American women have some of the lowest per capita wealth. We know the CNBC report on Black men and boys says that they're missing from the nation's economy. We know that post-Katrina, we had an opportunity to improve and invest in our affordable housing stock, and we didn't. And so there's about a $2 billion economic hole there. We know we've been on a roller coaster when you talk about crime. We've been the murder capital in about five or six different areas. Thankfully, the last several years, from Chief Woodfolk to now Chief Kirkpatrick and as well as Chief Ferguson, we've been on a downward trend. With District E, which was one of the most violent places per capita that I represent, based on Chief Kirkpatrick's comments, is leading in overall violent crime reduction. We know that the comeback to me means a sustainable city. Let's not just celebrate when we do something well, but that we can expect something well, not just from one event to the next, from one effort or one challenge to the next, but that we have a sustainable city in all those areas. So when I talk about comeback, I mean that. And we know we have to start someplace. And let's start to make New Orleans a city that works for all of us.
But keeping with that starting someplace, I mean, you have a front row seat, right? You sit on the city council. You've seen it. You've had the advantage, or sometimes you've taken it. I think more often than not in holding Mayor LaToya Cantrell accountable on any number of issues. So I ask again, where do you see the state of the city of New Orleans? I mean, you quoted a lot of stats that were nationally motivated. I get it. I understand. But when we talk about governance and we talk about leadership and we're talking about the council many times on a unanimous vote, having to get involved in some things that they ordinarily would not as a legislative body, describe that state of the state to me in a more granular way from what you, 'cause I think that's what the constituents want to understand, is what are you going to bring that's different than the leadership style that you exhibited while sitting on the council? Because, just the other day, we found out we're possibly $800 million short on the road program. How in the hell in March, the third week of March, we make that revelation to the council for the first time? I mean, that is a complete breakdown in leadership and accountability.
Well, first, let's get granular. But first, let me thank you for your comment about most of the time I've tried to work together. I worked with my colleagues on the council. I don't participate in the soap opera shows or a lot of the side stuff. You know, I took my lead from the late Joe Geruso, who was president of the council at one time, and, of course, Jim Singleton, who they always thought that rolling your sleeves up, respect, working together is the best way to do it. But let's get granular. Rob Masson asked me 7 months after I was elected this time, and I was out of politics for 14 years. I'm really kind of like one of the junior members of the council. I've been back in politics for 3 years now, so others have served there much longer than me. That's a fact. But when you talk about granular, Robinson asked me, what was one of the things that I noticed that was different from when I served before to now? And there were two things that came to mind. Lack of institutional knowledge, which is something that people complain about at every level of government now. And then the ability for folk to collaborate and work together. But if you want to talk about getting granular, there's no reason that permits should take months and a year to issue. There's no reason that once we dig, we should at least have a minimum of 90 days to fix it. Once you dig, get all the utilities, whoever is underneath that hole, that we shouldn't have 4, 5, 6 months before somebody comes back and fills the hole. We should have 48-hour sanitation fixes. Well, I think it should be 24, but let's say you need an extra day. If someone complains about missed trash or some complains about mistakes in sanitation, why should it take a week for someone to come back and pick up the trash they missed or the mistake that was made or the item that they left? A minimum of 48 hours. It has taken some folk 9 months, 10 months, a year. I met with a group of business people about permitting. I've helped officials in other parishes who've recommended friends to me whose permits were just sitting, who got their check back that would pay for their permit, but the city sent the check back because they weren't dealing with that application yet. Those are just a few things. Transparency, when you talk about investments, folk investing in communities. If business people are looking at a neighborhood, why can't we go to a city dashboard to say that someone's interested in development of the community, and the community isn't noticed after the fact, but they can pull it up to see what's going to impact their neighborhood, what's being proposed in their neighborhood. Another thing is I'd really like to sit down with the folk in the city to see, when you talk about accountability and policing, is it time now to consider electing our next police chief, or at least having a committee of citizens involved in the review process, not just people from government or people from the business community? So, you know, that's a whole list of granular areas where I think we can begin to immediately make a difference and to restore some confidence, not just on the business side, but on the community side.
Well, then you would agree that there is very little or no confidence at the present time.
I mean, when you look at every poll,
the city services poll and some of the other polls, there may be some minute differences, but the overwhelming feeling of the constituency is that this administration, at least for the last 7.5 years or 7+ years, has been a complete and total failure.
And in the same survey, and you've probably seen the same ones I've seen, where the legislative bodies don't fare in terms of confidence that well either. So, you know, it's like the pot can't call the kettle black if we're not trying to work together to make sure that the pot is clean or ready to cook something. So, you know, one of the reasons why I called for a retreat both times when I was initially elected and over a year ago was because I was trying to follow the lead of former council members as well as myself to get everybody in the room to talk about, though we may have differences on certain issues, how do we collaborate on these things that will restore more public confidence? How do we get these things done that the public has been waiting on? And folk don't have a lot of confidence.
You don't believe for a moment that Mayor Cantrell has tried to accommodate the council in any way, shape, or form, do you?
No. There have been a whole host of mayors that I'm not talking about a host of mayors.
I'm talking about this mayor.
There have been
simple requests made by you and other council members in a unanimous fashion where she has just really kind of flipped y'all off and said, not happening.
And that's unfortunate. And let's say that I wouldn't be the kind of mayor to do that. I think that you meet with everybody, people you like, people you don't like, and you try to come to conclusions to try to work together to get stuff done. If you remember back in the 90s when the Jim Singleton Council was on one side and the Bob Morial administration was on the other side, and they convened those meetings to kind of get everybody together on the same page. Well, that's the kind of mayor I would want to be. There are also people who don't want to meet with certain people. I'll meet with anyone who wants to help make sure that we have a city that works for us. And if you remember back then, council was on one side, Morial administration was on the other side, and they got together and worked together. And what was the product of that? We had a 70% reduction in violent crime, double the national average, led the nation in juvenile crime. Home ownership went over 41% for the first time in history. And we had a growing black middle class amongst its largest demographic. Those things didn't happen because I said it. I was part of it. Those things happened because we got in a room and we worked together, Lou.
Well, yes, there was, but you had a very proactive leader in Mark Morial who decided to go against what a lot of folks on the council were saying about going outside of the confines of the NOPD and bringing someone in from the outside to deal with this crime issue that we had at that point in time.
I was there, so I didn't recommend anybody inside or outside. And if you remember specifically, Chief Pennington wasn't even part of the list. He came.
No, he wasn't.
He came as a result
of Mark Morial.
That's absolutely correct. So, yeah, I don't remember recommending anyone, but just advocating for the best one.
There was a thought process that, you know, you had mm-hmm. to promote from mm-hmm. within. And if you're going to, you know, my thought has always been, if you're going to affect cultural change, it's not mm-hmm. going to be someone who's been the beneficiary of the culture.
It makes it very, very difficult to do that.
I mean, and that's why, you know, the appointment of Ann Kirkpatrick seemed to me to be the right appointment at the right time mm-hmm. Because of that very very nature of that challenge. Where would you be on reappointing Ann Kirkpatrick?
Yeah, I mean, I'm open to sitting with Chief Kirkpatrick in the community, as well as all the citizens in this community, to give her and anyone else who would apply an opportunity. I think she's earned the right, a couple of snafus, national and local, but she's earned the right to be considered. If you remember my comments when they reviewed it last year, when I said as someone who didn't vote for Chief Kirkpatrick, I have a lot of respect for her, and we've developed a good working relationship. And if you've been keeping, I know you've been keeping track, you know, you and I, we do this. We read all the reports. You'll remember her saying that she'd like to duplicate what she's done with me in my district, and that is walk the community and be more visible. So we've had a good relationship.
All right, we got to get to a break. We'll be back for your final comments. We're visiting with Oliver Thomas, City Councilman District E, now a candidate for mayor of the city of New Orleans. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. We're visiting with Oliver Thomas, City Councilman District E, who's announced his candidacy for the mayor of the city of New Orleans. Oliver, it occurs to me that we have two members of the council, the legislative arm of city government, running for mayor. What can we expect of you? Because I really believe that we are at a real delicate point in time with a lame duck mayor who has consistently kind of shunned the requests, demands, however you want to characterize it, of the council, where this doesn't become, you know, a mayoral political issue.
Well, I think there has to be a commitment that while you run a race, that there has to be a joint effort and some cooperation to make sure that the city's business is taken care of. I commit to that in terms of political gamesmanship. It's still important that we do our jobs, maintain a sense of decorum, and work together while this administration is on the way out. You have my commitment, the public has my commitment.
Do you see I've always said that this city needs to go through an exercise of right-sizing itself. And as we look at what's happening at the national level with Doge, and we look at what's happening at the state level with their adoption of Doge principles as well, your thoughts?
That's a great point, Neil, but probably people like you and I would understand that who've been involved. So think about it. And I've said this publicly, and no one's published it, but when I speak about political culture in the city and right-sizing, I use that at universities when I talk to groups. The city had 503,000 people pre-Katrina. The city budget was $500 million. After Katrina, and I think then we went to the Landry administration, the budget was around $700 to $800 million with 150,000 fewer people. Then, during the Landry administration, we had a high of 391,000 people with a close to $1 billion budget. Now we have 360,000 people, 31,000 fewer people, with a $1.7 billion budget. It seems like the only budget that's grown is government's, and our pockets have gotten lighter, the citizens. And I really believe that. And I've also done some independent surveys on my own. I learned that from Jim Singleton, who used to do department surveys, where you see that in many surveys, if based on the employees who were there, if you get 60% production, many who work within those departments believe that they can be organized or better organized so that we could produce more. So what I have seen is city budget grow, delivery of services be less dependable, but the amount that we pay be more. You're absolutely correct. And I'm the first person you've probably heard explain it like that. You're absolutely correct.
Well, I don't hear enough conversation about it. I think this is a defining moment for the city. I think, you know, it's going to course correct where we're headed, where we really need to focus on the basic priorities, infrastructure, delivery of city services first, and everything else second. I know that people say, oh, we can walk and chew gum. But the reality is we haven't. We've been tripping all over ourselves.
And that's why I spent time with my plan that folk can go to that says, you know, 48-hour fixes. Why can't we do it? We have the personnel to do it. The Love Your Neighbor annual campaign, the grants we can give to people to organize cleanups, right, and after-school programs in their community, 10,000 sustainable homes. The state has its program. Let's partner with investors and banks to make sure that what we didn't do post-Katrina, we can do now. The seven-day fixes in crime hotspots. I mean, if a light is out in a hotspot, let's give a minimum, a maximum of 7 days to get those lights back on. Fully staffed emergency. It should be 10-second responses with 911 calls. People shouldn't be holding on because that can mean life or death. So there are a lot of areas that I've been doing my homework. I've compared it to what it used to be. And we need to get not only become a 21st century community when you talk about delivery of services, but there are a lot of areas where we can do it better, as well as look at how much we're charging people. So people are paying for two-a-day pickup, but they're only getting one-a-day pickup. What about an audit of trash services, right, and how we pick up trash to see if we're getting the best bang for our buck? All of that stuff's in my plan. And I've talked about all those things.
And Oliver, you're in radio. You know I got to get to a break, but let me just say this.
I hope
that you will commit to come back on this show, not only when it's convenient for you, because it's all about keeping the constituency informed about what it is that's going on and where we stand on these issues. These issues are many, and they're incredibly diverse and require lengthy conversations about where people stand. And I hope to get that commitment from all of the folks that are running for office.
Real quickly, lastly, you'll remember when I was council president, when I worked with John Young and Chris Roberts, and we did the joint council meetings between Jefferson Parish and Orleans Parish. I initiated that because I thought that we need to work together. Our state and our region is losing population. It's more important that we work together now than ever before. And the same style I used then when I got us in the room at the Ilario Center of the airport in joint meetings is the same thing I'm going to commit to now. That's not going to change, no.
Got to get to a break. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, man.
We will be right back.
Audience,
We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. but that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. Five times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.